A listener note, this story contains adult content and language.
The guy is totally just a manipulator.
I've noticed that sometimes he gets his facts messed up.
He was belligerent. He was really, really drunk.
He's right there where he can do the same thing again.
He was the strong suspect.
Everybody's talking about the seventh son in the whole wide world. There is only one. I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one. The one they call the seventh son.
This is The Pope's Long Con from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting in Louisville Public Media. I'm Jake Ryan. In the last four chapters, we've told you a story of lies, exaggerations, and lawbreaking by Danny Ray Johnson, a preacher and lawmaker who calls himself the Pope. We've documented his rise from virtually unknown pastor to elected Kentucky state representative. We tried to talk to him ourselves. We called. We emailed. He made it pretty clear. He didn't want to talk to us. What we still don't know is, how could all this happen? How could he get to where he is when he's told so many lies and broken so many laws? Danny Ray Johnson's been on the radar of police, his fellow politicians, the church, and the media, but no one blew the whistle. In this last chapter, we'll try to figure out why. R.G. Dunlop continues the story with Miranda Richmond, who you met in the last chapter. She says Johnson sexually assaulted her in his church's basement on New Year's Eve, 2012.
Miranda Richmond's trip to tell the police her story was her first experience with the criminal justice system. She didn't know how it worked or who was supposed to do what and when. She put her faith in the police, and the police let her down.
It was just a dead end everywhere I got. It was a voicemail, no call back. Somebody would say, I'm calling the wrong division. It was just, they couldn't find my case.
Eventually, without Richmond's knowledge or consent, Louisville Metro Police Detective Tony Leisch marked the case closed by exception. That means the alleged victim either withdrew the complaint or else refused to cooperate.
I was only 17 when this happened, and so I don't know if I was supposed to go there and continue to try or if they were supposed to contact me, but it kind of frustrates me. Like, I feel as if they gave up on it because there wasn't enough evidence or something to prove that it had happened. And so I don't know. I don't want to blame anyone, but
in fact, Richmond didn't even know the case had been closed until we told her a few months ago. Her parents, Cliff Richmond and Kathy Brooks, didn't either.
That's bullshit. I can't see Miranda giving up. She's a strong-headed little fart. This really upset her enough to where she wouldn't just stop. I don't see that at all.
Don't see what at all?
I figured they probably just dropped it. That kind of pisses me off because I don't know how this stuff happens, how it just gets dropped. There should be some kind of record in case he does this again. But if they're not keeping a record on anything on him, because you couldn't pull anything from him, then if it happens again, it's going to be the first time instead of the second or third.
We wanted to know why the case was closed. We tried to find out by calling Detective Leisch, who since retired from the department.
I don't want to do any interviews. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We looked through more detailed police records Richmond shared with us. We talked to experts, read the department's policy manual, and looked at the relevant portions of state law. Here's what we found. The police seem to have made several critical mistakes. They got the criminal charge wrong. They never interviewed Danny Ray Johnson. And they closed the case without even telling Miranda Richmond. We asked David Stengel to review the case file. He's a former chief prosecutor in Louisville who's participated in plenty of police investigations. He saw several big and important holes in how the case was handled, including how police characterized the alleged assault.
I think this was not a misdemeanor. I think this was a felony, and it was a person in a position of trust and authority, a minister. He's right there where he can do the same thing again. So I'd have gone after it. Yeah, I don't want it done.
Here's what he means. After Miranda Richmond told police her story, Detective Leisch wrote up the incident as third-degree sexual abuse, a misdemeanor. The penalties for that offense are pretty light, and the statute of limitations is 1 year. That means the clock ran out on New Year's Eve 2013 to bring any charges against Johnson. David Stengel thinks the case should have been investigated as sexual abuse in the first degree. That's an important distinction because sexual abuse in the first degree is a felony. A felony conviction can mean years behind bars, and in Kentucky, there is no statute of limitations on prosecuting a felony. Sexual abuse in the first degree also fits better with the facts of the case as Richmond reported them. The law describes the offense as subjecting another person to sexual contact by forcible compulsion. But the law also states that felony sexual abuse occurs when someone in a position of authority subjects a minor to sexual contact. Richmond was a minor at the time of the alleged incident, and the law specifically mentions a religious leader as being a person of authority. Even though we've spent the last several chapters telling you about Johnson's phony claims of lofty titles and advanced religious training, to Miranda Richmond, he was her pastor, a religious leader, and a person of authority. Stengel says police considering the case a misdemeanor, not a felony, was a major mistake.
That's the one thing I don't have an answer to. That jumps out at me, and I don't see the logic for the sexual abuse third. I don't even see how that begins to fit.
As for the police not interviewing Johnson and not consulting with Richmond before closing the case, Stengel says they should have done both, and other experts agreed. We don't know why they handled the case the way they did. Louisville police officials agreed to meet with us, but when we pressed them about the case, they refused to discuss it. And when we persisted, they kicked us out without answering our questions.
Well, I'm going to get my stuff, but...
Okay, get your stuff. We're done.
Thank you.
We're done.
You're not going to give us an explanation as
no,
to why you
won't? No, I give you an explanation before. You're not going to play me like that.
I'm not trying to play you, Dwight, but we just have specific questions that we would
Thank
just
you,
like
sir.
An answer to.
Thank you, Jake.
Then, something unexpected happened. A few months ago, 4 years after police had closed the case, and just as we were pressing them for answers, a detective called Miranda Richmond. This detective wanted to know if Richmond was satisfied with the initial investigation. She said no, she wasn't. The detective asked if Richmond wanted to reopen the case. She said yes, she did. So they did. But so far, she says, there's been no progress.
The police department isn't the only institution that's dropped the ball when it comes to Danny Ray Johnson. Earlier, we told you how Heart of Fire Church, where Johnson preaches, has been cited on 3 different occasions for illegal alcohol sales, but the charges were either dismissed or led to slaps on the wrist. The illegal alcohol sales continue today. That's clear from our recent visit to the Pope's house, which is the on-site bar just a few steps from the church's worship hall. Why hasn't the government put a stop to it?
We met with Robert Kirchdorfer, the local ABC administrator, and asked him why a place like Johnson's Church, a repeat offender, doesn't warrant more scrutiny.
If we received another complaint or multiple complaints, we would get back out there.
Apparently, no one's complained. Mike Hatzel is an attorney who represented clients before the state and local ABC boards for 40 years. He says officers could have and should have paid more attention to the church bar.
Certainly, if someone has a history of violation, that they would then have reasonable suspicion that they are violating the law, and they should inspect it on a regular basis. And I'm surprised that they are not doing that.
So the ABC isn't keeping an eye on Heart of Fire. How about the IRS? Johnson encouraged church members to vote for Donald Trump. He made tearful predictions at church functions about the awful things that would happen if Trump lost the election. That's a clear violation of IRS regulations that went unpunished, maybe even unnoticed. If the IRS had been paying attention, they could have seen Johnson was violating the rules. They could have moved to rescind the church's tax-exempt status. University of Miami law professor Fran Hill says, "Don't hold your breath. The agency doesn't have the will or the money to act."
Because the agencies that are supposed to be enforcing the laws that Congress enacted is not doing it. And they've announced publicly that they were not going to and they were unable to.
But it wasn't just a couple of understaffed government agencies that allowed the Pope to prosper, because he's not just a preacher, he's an elected official, and before that, a candidate for state office. When Johnson started making racist Facebook posts, state political leaders from both parties called for him to get out of the race. But Johnson ignored them, and they let it drop. We asked state and local party leaders why they didn't do more to get Johnson off the ballot. Why didn't they give his background the scrutiny that public officials should get? Rebecca Witherington, chair of the Bullitt County Democratic Party, and Paul Hamm, the local GOP chair, both dodged the issue of their pre-election silence.
That campaign is done. It's over with. We're moving forward.
I'm not going to answer anything else about Dan Johnson. Let's push on.
Trey Watson is the spokesman for the state Republican Party. They issued a statement calling for Johnson to get out of the race after his racist Facebook post surfaced. But that was it.
You know, we washed our hands of the situation as best we could.
And the party did next to nothing to vet Johnson in the first place, to see if there was more they should know about their candidate.
We're very comfortable with the efforts that we took. You know, we, like I said, the only thing you can't get back in a campaign is time.
State Democrats didn't do much either. Daniel Lowry was the party spokesman at the time of the election. He acknowledged that the party knew about the alcohol violations. They knew about Johnson's questionable 9/11 claims. And they knew about the church fire. They even knew about Miranda Richmond. They responded by issuing a statement condemning the racist Facebook posts and calling a couple of reporters.
That was about as strong as we could do. I mean, there's nothing else we could really do. We would have had to have spent money on advertisements or something and bought commercials, maybe, but that wasn't my call.
Apparently, pressing the issue wasn't worth the money. Miranda Richmond says she also contacted a TV reporter in the weeks before the election, but it went nowhere. In the middle of October 2016, Richmond sent an email to Linda Belcher, Johnson's opponent. It said Johnson had sexually assaulted her several years earlier.
I told her that was something that I could not actually help her with and referred her to someone else.
In the email, Richmond also said something that, in hindsight, seems pretty ironic, that she'd hate to see voters elect someone they didn't know the truth about. So Democratic politicians knew Richmond was accusing Johnson of sexually assaulting her. They knew she was willing to talk about it, but they didn't do anything. And that brings us to the final piece in our examination of systemic failures, the media. Where were we? Chuck Clark is director of student publications at Western Kentucky University. He previously worked at 9 newspapers in a half dozen states.
The only thing that makes American democracy work is having an informed public, an informed electorate. There's a difference between journalism and information. Information is whatever you throw out there. Journalism is vetting that information, testing it, prosecuting it, questioning it, trying to poke holes in it to see if you really have the accurate information. There is a world of difference between finding something on Facebook and reading it in the Washington Post or the New York Times.
Clark's concerned about the current state of journalism. Most newsrooms have fewer resources now, so they have to make value judgments about what to cover. Shallow, popular topics bring the online clicks that please advertisers. It takes an investment of time and money to cover topics that are important but not so flashy, like local legislative races.
It requires editors and reporters to get with their community and make some tough decisions. They have to figure out what is important in their community. What, you know, are they going to give up? Because they're going to have to give up something if they want to be excellent at certain things, because there are fewer resources to spread around.
Our investigation of Danny Ray Johnson began with a tip, a late night text from a longtime source. The message was vague but intriguing. We thought it probably would lead to a minor story, maybe a quick hit investigation about a long ago incident and a sketchy politician. But the more we looked, the more we found. And the more we found, the harder it was to believe that someone could do so many questionable things for so long and still be so successful.
That's why we're here in a parking lot at the Bullock County Courthouse on a summer Sunday afternoon, looking for Danny Ray Johnson at a place where we knew he'd be, a 9/11 memorial. The sun's out. It's hot. Two giant American flags are flapping overhead. Standing in a crowd of bikers, wearing a suit and a red tie, is the man we've been trying to understand for months. The biker, the patriot, the Louisiana preacher turned Kentucky politician. He's the only one who can explain why he's done the things he's done, but he won't.
Danny Ray Johnson will be back in the state capitol next time the legislature meets. He'll be back on the ballot next year, and he'll be back in the pulpit on Sunday.
Long Con was reported and written by R.G. Dunlop and Jake Ryan. Our producer is Laura Ellis. Our editors are Brendan McCarthy, Erica Peterson, and Stephen George. Music by Kevin Ratterman. You can read this story with lots of extras at kycir.org.